Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music, Dave.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, baby.
No, what's in the box?
I said you give me the
what's
gun.
What's in the box?
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us. How can we tell if we're close? We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
They're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
You do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
Oh, I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hello, everybody. This is Abe.
Abe, how are you?
This is not Abe. This is Zool.
And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
Good. I'm safety pinning my socks so I don't lose them in the wash.
That's a lot of people do that. That's a smart thing. Yeah,
yeah, it's awesome.
Now, let's see. Actually, we got one of these little bags that you put all your socks in, this like netted bag, and then they won't ever get lost. It's kind of interesting.
Well, the thing is, the guy that I had, this one asshole that was just an asshole that I was with for like 2 years, but the only good gift he gave me in life was safety pinning my socks. I have not lost a sock since the day that I broke up with him.
Welcome to Dark Laundry Discussion.
Yeah. So for folks who are curious, this is being recorded on January 16th, 2020. So that is the record date of this specific episode. So who are we? For new listeners, we're Dark Discussions podcast, where we talk about fantasy, horror, sci-fi, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, and whatnot. Basically, dissect and review and basically try to talk intelligently about that genre that deserves intelligence.
Which doesn't happen very often.
I guess not. Eric, we do have a website. Is that correct, sir?
We do. You can find the website at www.darkdiscussions.com. On the front page, on the right-hand side, you'll find links to friends of the podcast. You can go check out their websites. At the top of the page, you will find a link to our article section, where you'll find articles written by myself as well as others for your perusal. You will find an audio link that has every episode of this podcast as well as all of the spinoff podcasts available to download for free. There's sure to be something there that will catch your interest. And then on the front page, you will find a link to our Patreon account. You can follow the link on the front page or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. Patreon allows you to financially support your online artists like us. If you'd like to contribute, for every $5 a month you donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw them randomly on a quarterly basis to do a show from a topic chosen by one of our patrons. If you'd like to help the cause, go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
You've been listening to Eric on the overnight.
Now, couple other things. A couple other things. We have email darkdiscussions@aol.com. So email us your reviews, your opinions, your comments, your suggestions. We will read your emails on the podcast. Also, you can join us on Facebook at the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where we will add you. There's a lot of talk over there on various topics, such as Mindhunter being kind of sort of canceled, the Jaws and Howling possible remakes, the Oscar nominations, including the Joker with its 11 Oscar nods, and so forth. So a lot of discussion going on there, so join us there. All right, so I think that's pretty much that. We do have some other house cleaning we will get to at the end of the episode. And I think, Eric, with all that said, I guess we can get into our topic tonight.
Tonight, we're going to be talking about a new movie currently in theaters, starring Kristen Stewart, called Underwater.
Really, we're shattering up the audio there.
Was that English?
I said you're really shattering.
Oh, shattering.
When you're underwater for months at a time, you lose all sense of day and night. And some things are just out of your control.
Do you really think that was an earthquake?
No.
We drilled to the bottom of the ocean, and we don't know what came out.
What was that?
Turn your lights on.
Underwater, rated PG-13.
That's right. This film, Underwater, technically it's not new. It's newly released because it was actually It was actually made in 2017, and it sat on the shelf for 3 years. Stars Kristen Stewart, as Eric said, but also Vincent Cassell, Jessica Henwick, John Gallagher, Mahmoudou Athi. Those are the pretty much.
Sorry, what was that last one?
Mahmoudou Athi.
Okay.
What? Say it again.
She was one of the Sand Snakes, and she played one of the characters here.
Oh, that explains so much. All right.
Let's see here. She's a British actress. The film is directed by someone named William Eubank, written by Brian DeField and Adam Cozard. Brian DeField actually wrote The Babysitter from a couple years ago. Adam Cozard wrote Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, and The Legend of Tarzan. The most interesting person here, and I think you'll appreciate this, Chrissy, and you probably could see it. Bojan Bazeli was the cinematographer who does a lot of Gore Verbinski stuff, and it looks very much like A Cure for Wellness, in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people.
There were some very nice, creepy images in this thing. Just very, very. That was one of the things I really liked about it. But anyway,
The budget is debatable. It's anywhere between 50 to 80 million. I've seen 60 mostly. It made about 7 million in the U.S. box office, or 16.2. Worldwide, so it's considered what they call a flop. Kristen Stewart's second flop.
Don't dazzle our listeners with the technical language there, Phil.
Yeah. Rating is about 52% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics, though the cinema score has been giving it a C, which is not good for cinema score. And then 35% of people say they would definitely recommend it. Only 35%. But again, we're here to give our opinions. And so I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this and what we thought. So Abe, why don't you start?
So I kind of caught wind of this film because of some of the advertisements. Little bits of I think there was a trailer I saw during one of my visits to movies, or was shown online on YouTube or something like that. I just caught wind of it like that. And it looked kind of interesting. I wasn't too certain about it. And I had, but I did have a feeling we'd be doing an episode on it eventually, unless it completely was awful. So I saw it this week. Some people here and there. Not a whole lot. It's very quiet theater. And the film overall is pretty decent. I think it did some pretty cool stuff. But it was a film that I felt its potential was not completely realized. Because there are some, as Chris is saying, there's some great imagery. There's some really creepy stuff in there. There's some really cool looking creatures. Some nice bits of atmosphere with the underwater environments, the lighting tricks and some effects. But I think it could have really delved into a little more. Maybe with a little more of a budget and some a little more of a runtime. Only because one of the things I had issue with was that the cast, their characters were not really developed all that much. And they don't give you much time to do so before they thrust them into the situation. In fact, within the first 5 minutes of the movie, the catastrophe strikes, and then you don't have time to know who's who before they're pulled apart or they're dying from the environment or whatever's going on. And so it's difficult to create some investment in some of the characters, and I could see some really nice moments with these characters, but that's only after so long in the film. But sometimes you only start to make a connection by the point they start to get, killed off somehow. It was overall enjoyable watch. I didn't hate it. I just kind of felt that there's a lot more that could have been done. I really wish they had kind of done a little more of like the hallucinations or kind of like the strain that being underwater and in this dark for so long could do to a person, which kind of would have melded well with the kind of Eldritch kind of tone that they were trying to set in place, which is kind of wink wink spoilery, I know, but we'll get a little more into that as we go along. But overall, it was a good watch. I don't know if it would really place very high this year. The year's just starting though, but we'll see. But anyway, we'll see in it.
All right, very good. Mike.
It's a movie. It's an okay movie. It is, I think, in the long run, a forgettable film. I think it had some serious storytelling flaws. It amazes me that this was a $50 to $80 million film, and this is going to be one more brick in the wall of the argument that you can't make big budget horror films, because for a horror film, whether it's 50 or 80, that's a very big luxury budget for a horror film. Other than maybe It, the last horror film I remember with that kind of a budget was Crimson Peak, and that flopped at the box office. So I find that disappointing. It's a monster underwater movie. It's got a really neat monster in it for what you see of it. And it's better than Deep Star 6. I don't know if it's better than Leviathan. So that'll give you an approximate feeling. Definitely not better than Deep Rising. Like I said, I've got very specific storytelling issues with it, and looking over after watching it, other reviews, I saw a lot of people saying the same thing from viewers, not necessarily professional critics. And I guess we'll talk about that when we get into the story. Other than that, yeah, you know, it's there. If you want to see a horror movie, go see it. January remains a dumping ground.
All right. Chrissy.
I went into this with low expectations. I first heard about it when I was watching a trailer, same as Abe. And I was like, oh, my God. Okay. I don't know if that's going to be any good. But every time I see one of those trapped underwater movies, like I don't know how old Deep Star 6 or Leviathan or some of these other ones are. How old is Deep Star 6? Do you remember? I think that was the last movie I saw with my mom, actually.
That was like something that was like the late 80s, right?
Yeah, I think that was the last movie that my mother and I went to.
Deep Star 6, Leviathan, and The Abyss, I think, were either all 1989 or 1990.
Oh, there was one that I saw with my mom that was an underwater one, and she died in 86. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Because of whatever that memory is that I have, whatever that freaking movie was I saw with her, every time I see one of these movies, I'm like, okay, it's probably going to suck, but I'm just going to go see it anyway. Because for me, it's kind of like evokes a nostalgia. That said, I went in with low expectations. I was surprised that it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I'm going to say that for me, it's not one of those movies I'm going to run around and tell everyone it's awesome, go see it. Truth be told, I felt the same way Mike did. I'm going to have a scant memory of a couple of images from this film in a couple of years. I will probably remember the couple of creepy images that I saw that I just adored. I thought they were great. There's a couple in particular I really loved a lot. And that's probably all I'm going to remember. I thought it was kind of like Gravity under the sea because of the way it was structured, but it did not have the depth. This is definitely a plot-driven film.
No pun intended.
Yes, ha ha ha, yes. It did not have, meaning the depth, it didn't have the levels that it needed. It didn't really work on a metaphorical level. It didn't really work on a literal level either. It was just kind of flat. But this is a plot-driven film. And also, part of the problem, I think, with these characters is that they are all static. There is no internal journey. And we will get into that. However, all of that said, I liked the pacing. I liked that it was one crisis after another, and it actually was ratcheted pretty tightly and very close in time to the last crisis. The characters, although they were flat, they were a little better than I've seen in some other plot-driven films, so I didn't mind it so much. It was the staticness that I noticed. And that bothered me more because I like my stories for the characters to go on a journey. Yes, you need static characters. You do. You can't have everybody have an arc, or it gets crazy. But I think they were just all static, and that just didn't work for me. I enjoyed the creatures. I thought they were creepy. I really thought the sound design was great. I loved like the way they did the breathing in the helmets and just the sound of the ocean. The theater, I saw it with like the Dolby, like the special theater where it's like extra Atmos volume. It's something like that. I don't know. I had to pay extra for the ticket, but what it was like the only showing, and I was like, what the hell, I'll just do it. And so the sound design I really enjoyed. But I think if I had to say one thing that this movie had going for it, it was its efficiency. There is one thing I am going to give it huge kudos for, and I'll go into that when we start talking spoilers.
All right, very good. For me, I think I probably liked it more than Abe, Chrissy, and Mike. Was a film I heard about through a trailers before other films. And for some reason, I thought one of the guys from Baby Driver, one of the bad guys in Baby Driver was in the film, but it wasn't. So I was kind of surprised. The cast, because I had forgotten. I kind of like these type of films, these claustrophobic films with a sci-fi kind of feel. So, you know, Alien and whatnot. And this obviously is somewhat being compared to that, but underwater. I liked that type of stuff. The film, I can see why it's not considered great or anything like that, but I am surprised that it was considered a January dumping ground film and that they decided to shelf it for 3 years before releasing it, because it could have been a nice little film to with a $50 million budget to have released in October near Halloween, I think. But all in all, I enjoyed it. All the acting was fairly good, even though one actor was comic relief, felt a little unrealistic in such a desperate time. But I can see other complaints, like how some people felt there was no buildup of characters and they just throw you right into the action. But I heard other people saying that was refreshing. But just for me, I enjoyed it and felt it was a pretty good little sci-fi horror film that is a good hour and 30 minutes to watch. Eric?
I didn't really have this on my radar at all until somebody mentioned it last week to do an episode on. I think I liked it a little more than Mike, Abe, and Chrissy, although I wouldn't argue with anything that they said. It just didn't bug me as much. 'Cause every once in a while, I like just a action-driven movie, and that's what this is. I will say that for me, I really had an appreciation for the visual effects in this movie, because not only the creature design, but they did a pretty good illusion of being at the bottom of the ocean. I found it to be quite convincing, and I don't think that's easy to do. I've never tried it, but I would imagine it's not easy to do. So, like, the acting, you know, honestly, a movie like this doesn't require a high degree of acting. Everybody in it was fine. I didn't have the problem with comic relief that Phil did, because some people react to stress like that. Their reaction is just to wisecrack it up. I work with one of them.
Sometimes, podcast with some of them, too.
But sometimes people crack wise when you don't want them to. But overall, I would say it's a decent movie. It's not a great movie. It's a good movie. You know, you're not going to see any phenomenal characters. It's not the best script writing in the world, but it's a neat creature feature. And if you like that, check it out.
Yeah, very well. Abe did mention something interesting about where the film could be going. And me and Eric mentioned it to me offline after I had seen the film, and I thought it was kind of a really good point, and we'll get into that. But
to the discount bins?
No, something different. but either way, let's get into the IMDb or Wiki, Eric.
Wiki. A crew of aquatic researchers work to get to safety after an earthquake devastates their subterranean laboratory. But the crew has more than the ocean seabed to fear.
Dun, dun,
that's
dun.
A weird sentence. Okay.
I read somewhere, maybe one of the miscellaneous reviews, that it took place in like 2050, but I don't remember seeing that. It must have been in one of the newspaper.
That's why I want to ask. I had an issue. I left my glasses on the concession stand counter, and so. I have glasses I use just for watching movies, right? Because they're long distance instead of the progressive lenses. It just gives me less of a headache.
I assume you found your glasses in the back, right?
Oh, yeah. But I realize that, like, the movie's starting. I go to put my glasses on, didn't have them. So I ran out of the theater, and I ran back in. By the time I ran back in, they were still in the credits. And the first thing I see is Kristen Stewart in a massive... Locker room, bathroom, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And as I'm watching it, and this is one of my story issues, I was feeling a little out of sorts because I couldn't tell if this was supposed to be set in present day, in the future. Was there anything like at the beginning where they flashed something about what was going on?
Not a date necessarily, but they did give, you know, like the sub... headings they were giving you throughout the movie about blah 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 drill 6.9 miles. They gave you one of those at the beginning for the setting.
They also mentioned
they don't mention the date in the
no
they don't.
Go ahead.
Well, That was one of the things that kind of irked me. It was like, I've never been in an underwater facility before. But this looked like a thing that was a locker room for 50 people.
Well,
one of the things they did state in the little subtitle thing is that there are 300 people in this station.
Yeah, it's a pretty major one because there's one point where she's running through the hall when things are going crazy and knocking on every door she can, trying to alert others.
Yeah, and that actually, I'm glad that Mike brought this up, because that was actually one of the things that I kind of wanted to compliment this movie on. It was the credits. I wanted to note the opening and the closing credits specifically, because both give you, if you're paying attention, exposition that moves the story forward. So the opening sets you up for the story. And at the end, it closes you out. Like in the opening credits, we find out how deep they're drilling. We find out where they're drilling. We find out what company they work for. We find out that they're down 36,000 feet. I do agree the whole thing about, they mentioned the side effects on humans working at that depth. I do think that was a story element that was dropped. They could have really done something with that because it was so highlighted in those credits. So I was expecting it to be in there. They talk about how much pressure there is. The construction's unique. We learn all of this through newspaper headlines and maps. And this could have been very badly done, in which things were not made clear so that you, the viewer, would miss the information. A good example of this, now this is not a new thing. At least a couple of the Godzilla movies did this, and I'm sorry, they sucked at it. It was so many pictures and headlines, and I was like, what the hell am I supposed to be learning from this sequence? You're supposed to be getting exposition so that you don't have to have a big, as you know, Bob, we're 36,000 feet down and blah, blah, blah. I mean, if that was one of the things I liked about this. The credit sequence I thought was nicely paced, and they specifically highlighted a few words so that you could grab them quickly. So it wasn't like lost in a sea of things like the Godzilla thing was. And I did. I went back and watched my Godzilla movie today. I think it was the first one. And just to see if I was right.
Was Mothra in it?
No, it was the first one. It was the one before King Kong, Skull Island.
Before the Gareth Edwards one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And it was just like everything was a mess. And I was like, what the fuck am I supposed to be reading?
I didn't have trouble with that. And
the
sequel throws it all at the end, right? And has, like, Ace found, blah, 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 you know, yeah.
Right, but I just thought that this specifically did well in that it highlighted things, whereas in the Godzilla credits, you really had to look for what you were supposed to get because they had too much stuff on the screen. I always felt that. And it didn't bother me in the Godzilla movie until I saw this one because I know the whole Godzilla thing, so I kind of know what's going on, so it didn't bother me. But in a thing like this, I didn't know anything. What these credits did, I felt, was that it cut out the need for a whole, like, half an hour of just crap, people talking and establishing, so that they could get you right into the action. Because as Eric said, this is just an action movie. That's really all it is. So that thing I just liked. That was one of the things I did like about this, and I did want to give the movie credit for that because I thought it was good. But.
Right, and that's where I'm thinking it must have said 2050, because I must have missed it.
It says it in the closing credits. Again, I missed a bit of the opening credits, so I might have missed it there. I want to be clear, I'm not holding that necessarily against it, because I know I could have been missing it. I had other storytelling issues with it. But see, I know when I'm watching in the beginning, I thought, well, you know, it's a low-budget horror movie. You know, looks like they filmed this scene in the Y. You know, just the local YMCA. And, you know, now it's, oh, no, it had a $60 million budget. Then, well, what the fuck? There's still physics involved. But, yeah, it's a monster movie. I can throw a lot of plot logic kind of out the window for something like that if it gets me people killed and eaten by monsters. There was other stuff I thought was really neat in design, like the aqua suits, you know, whatever.
Reminded me a lot of Leviathan.
By the way,
yeah.
Just to mention it, so it's been mentioned. Horrible title.
Yeah.
Underwater? Really?
Yeah.
Really? You couldn't do better than that?
Well,
with your $80 million budget, you couldn't pay somebody to think of a better title than that?
I almost think, Eric, that I don't know if there was stuff written that was cut out, but it almost seems to me like it should have been a title that worked on a couple of levels. Like, in other words, Underwater would have been fine. And I was kind of thinking the same thing when I left
as
the theater.
As long as they were about to default on their mortgage?
No, Underwater would have been okay as long as it was also talking about something else, not just the fact that they were literally underwater, but maybe, who knows? I don't know, maybe she was drowning
Chrissy,
in her own grief or something. Do you understand what I mean?
I see what you're saying, Chrissy, but I think what Eric's talking about for marketing purposes, Underwater, even with a double meaning, is a terrible title in his opinion. And again, I'm sorry if I'm speaking for you, Eric.
You got it right.
Yeah, but so Eric's probably basically saying, and what I kind of agree with, is that if they had called it some you know, like the Poseidon Adventure, you know, that's
right. Or
it, like we were talking about Dr. Sleep. Dr. Sleep was the name of the book. It's a horrible title to get people in the theaters. So is Underwater.
I agree.
It's that horror films can have some fantastic titles.
Yeah, like that. Once Above, So Below.
So
or whatever.
Below, yeah. Even now, again, titles. We're not talking about the quality of the films, but just as titles. They can have great titles. The Girl with All the Gifts, stuff like that. Or they have these really unimaginative, just open up the dictionary, pick up a word.
Right.
Yeah.
Pressure. Dark.
I think Pressure would have been better.
Below.
Under Pressure.
Beneath. Oh, did you see Beneath? Oh, was that the one about the underwater monster? No, it was the one about the ghosts in the submarine. Oh, that one was Below? Oh, yeah, whatever. You know, just... No, that one was
That
Pressure.
Was What Lies Beneath. That was What
yeah,
Lies
that's
Beneath.
A good title. That's a good title.
I do
like
that
What
title.
Lies Beneath. Good title. Oof. And look, can we... I think can we all just admit, whether it's deserved or not, maybe it's not a good idea for Hollywood to be putting Kristen Stewart up in the front of a title anymore.
Yeah, probably.
Just saying. No offense to her.
I think she's gotten a bad rap because of her involvement in the Twilight movies.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She's not an awful actress, but
she's not
a great actress either.
No, so. She isn't.
But let's say she turns into a great actress someday. The thing is she's more apt at this point in her career to turn people away than say, oh, I got to see that because it's Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, but there's one reason. Yeah, well, that's problem number one, right? She actually has admittedly, it's been a while since it's been a relevant meme, but, you know, there's an internet meme, and that spawned a million other internet memes, which was, you know, the facial expressions of Kristen Stewart. when you spawn a meme over how bad your acting is, which I really, again, want to point out, I think that has a lot more to do with how bad the directing was of the Twilight films, because there are good actors in those films who acted badly, sort of like, you know, the bad acting in the Star Wars prequels that had people like Natalie Portman giving terrible performances.
McGregor and Liam Neeson. And
I thought they did well. I thought they were able to survive.
But I know what you're saying. Yeah.
But the purpose of putting someone's name in front of the casting someone in the lead and putting a marketing campaign over, we have this person, is not because you think they're a good actor. It's because you think they're going to put asses in the seats.
People. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
And she's put negative asses in the seats.
I shield myself from marketing campaigns intentionally. So was she heavily featured as a marketing piece of this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Phil and I were talking about the actor that actually played the smartass in this movie. It took me like half of the movie to place where I knew him from, because he was Hud from Cloverfield. and you don't see his face much in that movie. Right. So like I recognized the voice, but couldn't quite place where I knew him from. And
he was also
Phil was
actor, Eric, of that big TV show on HBO.
Silicon Valley.
Silicon, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, he was in the first five seasons. And then he left because he was just really busy. And
well,
if you map it out, it meant he left about the time that this was being filmed. So this is what he left for.
Well, and to finish my thought,
yes.
Phil was pointing out that he got himself in some trouble. And he's pretty much persona non grata at this point. So perhaps the part of the reason this movie was shelved for several years is because you had the Kristen Stewart image issue and then the image issue with this dude. And they're like, do we really want to release a movie with these people right
and,
now?
And the sand snake, too. And a sand snake.
Right, right. So maybe that was part of the reason.
Yeah, and just to be fair, I know they're saying it's, and I've seen it elsewhere, it's been shelved for 3 years. This was filmed in 2017. Usually movies are rarely released the year that it's filmed. So it probably would have been released 2018. And it barely got released in 2020. Right. So, got delayed, about 2 years, I think, more, or maybe a year and a half, more than 2 years. But yeah, this was definitely on the shelf for a little bit. The other thing is that this was a Fox film.
That's right.
Mm.
And ever since Disney bought Fox, they've just basically been dumping the Fox stuff, very little fanfare, very little promotional support. Now, in fairness, that could partly be because a lot of the Fox stuff that they've been dumping hasn't really been all that good. And they're just trying to they're getting it out there. They're getting whatever money they can out of it without throwing any extra money into it. A good example is this New Mutants movie, which is the last Fox X-Men film. It's coming out in April. It was supposed to come out 2 or 3 years ago, and then they pulled it and they're going to reshoot some of it. Disney just said, fuck it, we're releasing it, and we're not doing any reshoots.
Yeah, there's literally memes about how long it's been taking for this movie to come out, because it's been delayed so many damn times.
I think I made a joke about, I think this might be the fourth time it could get mentioned on the Dark Discussions podcast, what we're looking forward to.
Which is why that episode is such a waste of time. Sorry, I had to say it.
This is extremely unusual. Most of those films do come out.
That's right.
I don't know if I'd use the word most.
I would. Most of the ones I pick come out. I can't speak to what other people pick.
Okay, fair enough.
So again, that may be a symptom of it. Maybe this is a film that needed a couple of reshoots, and it's not unusual anymore. Films are getting reshot all the time after testing. And Disney might have just said, no, fuck it. It's not our thing. Fox spent the money. We're not taking the loss. We'll just get whatever we can out of it.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, when I saw that Vincent Cassell was in it, I was like, oh, this is cool. I like him, and stuff. But, again, he's not a name for random people. But, honestly, the cast is fairly good cast, even with – HUD and his off the screen problems. He's still a good actor. The Sand Snake was a woman. She was pretty solid. Gallagher is a really good actor in pretty much everything he's in. And Stewart was fairly good for this film. And then of course Vincent Cassell, who's like one of the biggest actors in Europe. He's as huge as like Antonio Banderas over there. So it's a really good cast. That's not the problem with the film. If there's problems with the film, it's...
No, you're right. That's not the problem with this film.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things,
I think Mike and Abe had it right that the issues with this film are with the writing.
Sure.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, it did have a couple of... There was, again, just like the credits, there was one thing I did want to give the writing credit for, and it's one specific thing that I'll get into when we get to that point. But I felt that it was just really lacking. And like I said, when you do a movie where all the characters are static, it just kind of, I don't know, it's just got no life to it. It's like, who cares? These people aren't going to be affected by this anyway, except that they're going to die. So what's the challenge here?
Right. To not die. Yeah.
I mean, you had a general idea, you know, who's going to live and who's going to die. They did a few surprises, and nowadays there's two of the new things that you see a lot of in these type of films, horror films and whatnot now, are the main powerhouse is a woman, and the main powerhouse actually usually dies at the end, and so that it could go that way, or it could have been, you know, her character living too, but you kind of gathered some of the other characters were going to be redshirted. I mean, Vincent Cassel, you know, if he's higher up than the lead actor, he'll either die or be incapacitated, because that's what usually happens when a general or a commander or the captain is not the lead character. That usually is what happens. But all the other characters, I guessed they could go either way. I don't know. What did you guys think?
I mean, one of the things that has been popular in a lot of media is subverting expectations on certain character deaths. Like, one thing people have really enjoyed, which has kind of been abused, is like trying to expecting certain characters to die and find other characters who are more important dying. And playing around with that, you know, Game of Thrones was very popular for doing that for a while. But in this case here, it felt pretty straightforward in terms of which characters were going to be sticking around and who was going to get bumped off. I mean, there wasn't any question of who was going to get very far in the story.
Yeah, I think a movie that did a pretty good job of maintaining that question for me was in recent years was Life.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good. Yeah, one. that was pretty
good point. Yeah,
Which I understand that is literally the exact opposite of this film, and that it's an outer space instead of in the deep sea. But otherwise, a lot of similarity.
Same idea. Yeah,
I actually read somebody compare the two movies.
Oh, really? Okay.
So yeah, David Chen actually compared this movie to Life. He said it was somewhere in between Life and Alien, probably closer to Life.
No. I think Life is somewhere between this and Alien. in terms of quality?
No, in terms of the plot.
Oh, okay. I thought Life was a lot better than this film.
Oh, I agree with that.
Again, I gotta be honest, this is a watchable film. And if you have like one of those a free movie pass or a tremendous amount of money, or something like that, you know, go watch it in the theaters.
Well,
I have to say that this is my favorite horror movie of 2020 so far. The bad news is that the other horror movie of 2020 I've seen is the remake of The Grudge.
Well, I will say that I did, after I saw Underwater, I had put on Facebook that I was watching it. And a couple of my friends who just enjoy going to movies because they just want to turn their brains off. They're like those kind of moviegoers where they're just like, dude, I just need to go somewhere and sit in the dark and watch something that is completely like going to pull me out of my world. And I recommended it to both of them. And I said, you know what? You guys would probably love this. I said, it's totally going to turn your brain off. The imagery is beautiful. I was really blown away by how, like Eric said, they did the deep sea like effects. Like, I would actually be interested in watching a documentary on how they did that. And they both told me today, they texted me, they were like, dude, that movie was, that was totally perfect. It was like not too deep. It was fun. It was light. It was whatever. You know, these are not people who go and try to pick apart movies. They just want to go see something. So, right. You know, that's going to, like I said, take them out of their lives. And I think for that, it's certainly a decent it's certainly a decent movie for that. It's just, you know, you just want to go have fun you know what else I like? It's short. When I saw it was an hour and 20 minutes, I was like, all right, score. That's
yeah.
That's
I mean, I
yeah, think, just fun. And let's go.
Yeah. I think it is definitely strange. I mean, because at one point I did mention how I wanted a little more time for the characters to develop, But because of how much time they had to really tell the story and kind of give us that experience, it sort of helped it a little bit in terms that its pacing was a little tighter.
Yeah, see, I don't think my problems are a problem a lot of people are necessarily going to have. Because a lot of it had to do with story structure and flow. And I found there's a lot of people who watch movies who don't know what the fuck's going on in a fairly coherent movie. So they may not be the people who have the same complaints. For mine, I don't know if it's a writing thing or an editing thing. It's that there were a lot of times in the film where I really didn't know what was going on.
Right, that has a lot. Well, and I think that's intentional, though. At least at the beginning of the movie.
Well, no, not at the beginning of the movie. At the beginning of the movie, I got it. Something happened. There's a disaster. Again, I was a little off, like, what was the setting of the film necessarily? Like,
oh, yeah, what year or whatever.
What year was it? But I was willing to kind of push that and think maybe I missed something at the beginning, and then I saw at the end it was 2050. But in terms of, like, I got the idea they had to get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that I got. But there was a whole bunch of stuff that happened in between.
Right.
Where they were doing things where I wasn't completely clear as to what they were doing and why. And that left me a little confused.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, where they were necessarily at any one point in their journey. How close were they to where they were getting?
They were locked
into place. They went
one
underwater, back into the facility, then going back out again.
One movie that did it really well was the original Resident Evil film, because you remember they do that 3D model and then they show where they're located and stuff. I think they could have added a couple more scenes where they showed us, the viewers, the map, I guess, and where they were located.
What were doing at this... Oh, we've hit this checkpoint in the video game. Now we must do this job. Well, what are they doing? Why are they doing?
And I wasn't. They were trying to get the fuck out of there so the place wouldn't fall on their head.
Before they begin their journey, they do like a quick recap of what they wanted to do. And they show what places they are going to go. But yes, I do agree that it kind of can be disorienting to try to figure out where they are at that certain point, because a lot of times they run into a lot of obstacles and it forced to detours and stuff like that. And also because in order to kind of capture the sort of claustrophobic kind of dark atmosphere of the ocean bottom, a lot of your sights are obscured by, you know, the murky water and the shadows and the weird shapes. So at certain points, I was kind of trying to remember, like, okay, how far are they at this point? And once in a while, a character would break up, like, we're here. But I was, it kind of had to be thinking back to, like, okay, where was that in that course?
For whatever reason in this movie, none of that mattered for me. I got the idea that they had to keep moving. There was a urgency to them keeping moving to try and get from one place to the other, and that's all that really mattered. Where they were or where they were going, really the specifics didn't matter. The plot mechanism of driving them forward was what was driving them forward, and it didn't really matter to me the details. That was just for me personally.
Right, but I was seeing a number of people who were a little confused as to kind of what was going on in terms of the big picture. And like one of the few things I did get, and Chrissy knows this, Chekhov's other abandoned undersea station. When the person mentions for no particular reason.
Oh, that place is gone.
Right.
Sure it is.
Can't we go to that spooky old abandoned haunted mansion over there? No, that's way too far out of our way. We would never make it there. We're like, well, I'm sure they didn't mention the old spooky abandoned station for no particular. But then Kristen Stewart just happens to end up there. I'm like, I thought that was supposed to be like way on the other side of town. I was like in the bad side of town, like they were in and It Follows. You know, how did she end up there? Little things like that. And I'm like, and it's just a matter of sort of like in an action film, it's nice to have
for the audience to have an understanding of the setting, you know, where the action's taking place, so they can so when it's going from one level to the next, you got to understand the choreography a little bit. You understand the geography of the place, and it helps, I think, for a Haunted Mansion film, not a Haunted Mansion, a travelogue film, to kind of get the layout of the land.
And now, I get what you're saying.
Their journey. So, and again, it wasn't just
the complaint. I've had the same complaint with other movies, like The Nun. It just didn't bother me in this one for whatever reason.
All right. And again, it's not fundamentally, does it make it a worse, well, does it ruin the film for me? No, because fundamentally, a lot of the bullshit they're doing along the way is just jargony bullshit.
Right.
But I just, it's just one of those things that said, well, what are they doing? And when you have to stop and say, what are they doing? It pulls you out of the movie just a little bit and keeps it from being quite as immersive. Like, Eric, Abe, you talk about developing the characters. I didn't necessarily mind that the characters weren't well plotted out. Given that they're all cannon fodder and it's an hour and 20-minute movie, I'm fine with that. And I kind of like the fact that while the characters were clearly drawn enough in that they each had some personality to them, but they weren't like G.I. Joe characters. Right, where they have that one personality trait, and they're kind of cartoonish. So the T.J. Miller character, he's got the bunny, he makes some jokes, but he's not constantly wisecracking and doing stand-up shtick.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to agree there that I was kind of worried that at first the T.J. Miller character would overdo it and kind of take away from the tone because, you know, of how the situation kind of grew worse and worse as they were going along. But there were nice little moments where that character kind of came down to the level, and I think it was kind of a really nice a little balance there. Sorry, Chrissy, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. I just wanted to say that I think I interrupted you, but whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry, Abe. I actually liked the funny guy because to me, he didn't seem over the top. I mean, sometimes we all know this trope, right? They put a character in there just for laughs, and it's way ridiculous, and it's just too much. And it's played for comedy to break the tension, and it's done very deliberately. I thought this guy actually, I don't know which one of you said it that said it wasn't realistic. I thought he actually was more realistic than any of these other ones that I've seen in recent years. He actually reminded me of a couple of people I went to Goddard with that were always just cracking. I mean, you know, shit, bad shit could be happening and they would just sit there and say the stupidest shit. Like, and also he was the connection too. There was one kind of multi-leveled thing in this movie, and he was the guy who kept quoting Alice in Wonderland. He kept quoting Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. And one of the themes in Alice in Wonderland is, well, threat of death is one thing, how we handle the threat of death, which very much connects to this movie. One of the other ones is curiosity and how our curiosity as human beings can get us into trouble if we are not careful with it, which I think also connects to one of the themes of this movie. So even though this movie was not well written, there definitely were themes there. There definitely were connections that were being made. But this guy was kind of the way in. He almost, and the fact that he had the rabbit, of course, the bunny was significant, the white rabbit, you know, from Alice in Wonderland. So I think maybe that's why they kind of made him a little less over the top. I think if I had to guess, I would bet that he was probably modeled or supposed to represent one of the Alice in Wonderland characters, like the White Rabbit or the freaking – who knows? I just know –
He was the guy with the bunny.
That's what I said. Yeah, that represents the White Rabbit. That doesn't mean that's who he represents. I don't know Alice. I know Alice in Wonderland, but not like there's people I know that are obsessed with it. That if I called them, they could tell me if they saw this movie who he was actually supposed to mirror. But anyway, that was just my thoughts. Okay, sorry. I'll go back to being quiet now, but I just wanted to throw that in. So,
and I also think very rarely do I imagine people sit down and intend, in live action anyway, to film a movie that's an hour and 20 minutes. So I kind of wonder if...
Well, yeah, I had the same thought, Mike. And if I had to take a guess, I would guess that originally they had more at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because the way this movie starts is a little unusual, and then they do throw you right into the action. Usually you do get a little, at least, introduction to the characters and a little bit of background before everything goes haywire, and they didn't do that here. And I'm wondering if that was just because they were like, you know what? Nobody gives a shit.
Well, and you
these,
know, too,
these characters aren't lovable, so let's just cut that out and make the movie
yeah,
shorter.
Yeah, and they just focused on, all right, you know what? We want to get him from point A to point B in as little time mm-hmm. as possible. You know, like, there are points where I wasn't getting the relationship between all the characters. Who knew who didn't. And again, that kind
there
of
there was like a love
it.
Triangle something going on, but they didn't explain it clearly.
Yeah, and
no,
and
they, well. Yeah. Yeah, and there was in the opening, she talks about the captain, which is what, you know, you guys just said there might have been stuff cut out.
Yeah.
She talks about her captain, but we're not sure who she's talking about because she doesn't say it specifically. The first thing she says in the movie is something like, he didn't believe in time, only moments. He was the glass half full type. And I'm thinking, who the fuck is he? Who is she talking about?
Yeah,
I kind of put it together later. It was the captain, because when she ran into him and he was sitting there near the escape pods, the way he touched her face, I went, oh, they used to be lovers. I get it. I know who she was talking about now. You know what I mean? I could see the whole story spelled out there between them in that one moment.
Which feels weird because it feels like some of the part, those pieces, if that was true, feels like fragmented. They did cut out some more there.
That's what I'm thinking. I think you guys might be right. I didn't think about this, but I think you guys are right. They probably cut a lot of shit out.
Yeah, the thing for me is, you know, the original Star Wars, right? There's the battle on the Death Star at the end, and there's a moment, you know, we've been seeing ships blow up left and right. And where you see the character Biggs, his X-Wing blows up and there's a dramatic pause. Luke looks at it. Dramatic music is playing and it's intended to be an important moment. And the reason it is because he's a friend, a childhood friend of Luke's. And
yeah,
all that
right.
stuff had been cut out at the beginning of the film. And so that's sort of a vestigial scene left over from that. And
right.
so whenever I see things like that where there's a hint of a relationship or something, it makes me think, all right,
well,
there was a scene earlier that set this up and they couldn't get rid of this scene.
Right.
But the thing that set up is gone, but they couldn't get rid of this element in it because the rest of the scene plays it. So you just have this weird thing happening here.
Well, and I'll say this, that I would not be surprised if this was a cut down film, because I could see they could have gone another 10 to 15 minutes with backstory and various other things. And I think it would not be surprising to me if some of that is on the cutting room floor.
Give us the U-Bank cut.
Well, because you really, I mean, it is interesting how they just start the film off where we don't have any characters shown, and then suddenly there's this earthquake, or what we think is an earthquake, and boom, we're already into the thing. You know, like Poseidon Adventure, the original anyway, you know, you had like 15 to 20 minutes where you're introduced to the characters and all that and whatnot, and this here is completely different. So I'm curious if that was intentional or if there was stuff that
was
cut out.
Yeah, I think it was cut that way, but personally, because I would guess that originally they had some intro material there.
Okay. Yeah, and that's what you're assuming too, Mike and Chrissy.
I'm not. I'm assuming that there might have been, again, the decision to start in media res, in the middle of things, I got the impression that was kind of how they wanted to start it, or maybe that was eventually an editorial decision, literally.
Okay.
But I think there might have been more stuff along the way. But that might have translated to more downtime, and people got bored in the preview screenings, saying, I don't give a shit about T.J. Miller's childhood or who's fucking who. And so they said the audience doesn't care, so cut it out. Anything where people aren't getting killed or moving the story forward, done.
Well, the other thing I wonder, too, is what the fuck was she doing in the bathroom? Like, because it starts with her in the bathroom and she's talking about he. And I thought for a second there, did she just have like a fight with her lover or something? But I don't know who that is.
Yeah, that's you know, like, because why? This is like 2 a.m. or something. Everybody's
it's the middle of the night.
And she's the only one up brushing her teeth as if she just left her, either like you said, got in a fight with her lover or just left her lover's room and is now heading back to her place. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I would be very interested. I'm sure. I mean, I certainly would not buy this movie. I have to be careful because if I come home and say I love a movie, the next thing I know, my husband's awesome. He gets it for me on DVD or Blu-ray or something for my birthday. So I always have to come home and say, this is not a movie I would want to own, you know? However, I doubt they're going to release all this extra crap. But honestly, if they do a release of this and I find out there's like tons of deleted scenes, I'm going to get it just to see.
I might be there with you, Christy. I'd be very interested to know. And also, like you were saying, like a behind the scenes documentary about how they made it look like the bottom of the ocean, I would totally be into watching too.
Yeah, because that was cool. And there was some interesting imagery there too. There was one moment that really freaked me out where they're down there in the dark or she's alone in the dark. And she looks at like her light goes somewhere and just off in the corner, you catch what I swear to God looks like a person.
Yes.
But it's not like it's not any of her other people down there. And I'm going, what the hell is that? And then it's gone in 1 second.
It
unsettled me. I was like, oh, my God, that just gave me the chills.
Yeah.
Like,
and
yeah.
There's another cool moment when they're running around in panic and on one of the bases over lights, you see something standing in that light, watching them as they're running towards one of the hangars.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, it's kind of watching, looking down at them as they're running in and stuff like that. And one thing I really did like was the nice build up to the reveal of the creatures and stuff. They just kind of tease these images in the corner of your eye and everything like that. You see something slither off or hear something, but you don't really get anything until later. And it's a pretty cool monster when you see it.
You know what I did like, too? I liked that they were sort of J-horror-ish the way they moved.
Well, let's I don't think we've officially thrown up a spoiler flag. Let's do that now.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, we might as well because we already ruined, like, a lot of shit.
Well, we've been talking really mainly general background rather than specifics.
Yeah. I mean, the first 5 minutes – everything happened, so it's not like we really spoiled anything, right? I don't think we did. So, okay, that sounds good, Eric. We'll throw up that spoiler alert, so anybody wants to bring anything
to
up now?
To continue with that thought, probably my favorite line of the whole movie, I'm just going to call him Hud because I can't remember his name, is when Hud said, maybe this is a bad question to ask right now, but is this one a baby?
Yeah.
his character's name is Paul. Paul.
Yeah, the other thing I liked when they had that little cute anime moment, like, oh, I like anime. You like anime? It's like, dude, the whole building is about to fall. Let's find out who likes anime. Like, I don't know. That was just funny. But it was quick. Again, it wasn't overdone. They didn't drag it out. It was a quick mention. It was over. You know, just a little something.
But it's quick, and it's, to me, it's real, right? It's
that's what I felt, yeah.
I could see somebody do it. Now, if they stopped to have an in-depth discussion on Akira versus Ghost in the Shell, then I would say, all right, now it's just wasting time and being self-indulgent. But just as a quick moment, you know, it's like I've been on this fucking tomb in the bottom of the ocean, and here is a guy who has the same interest in me. I've been dying to talk about something, and fuck. You've been here the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. That was kind of the impression I got that meant. It was like, you've been here the whole time. I never even met you. What the fuck? Like,
exactly. And to me, they got it out with you know, two lines of dialogue, and we were done, and that was it. And to me, it added texture. I liked the character work they did and stuff like that. I thought that it was, you know, the way they dealt with the characters through most of the movie. It was sketchy, but given the pace at which the film was going, we got a couple of quick, like, we got T.J. Miller's the funny guy. We got that the other guy was, you know, the one that was probably going to crack under pressure. The insecurity of the other female. We got these things pretty quickly and identified who they were. And then, of course, there was the black guy, and they killed him off first. So, you know, but you got enough of a handle to say they were people, but they weren't cartoons.
Yeah, right. Agree.
I would agree. Yeah. The characters were likable enough, and they were, if not developed with backstories, they were developed enough that you knew who they were by talking to them, meaning they, when they were, you know, communicating with each other, even if we weren't sure what they did and their skill was, because, I mean, I was still confused on that. But generally, as characters, they were real people, and they weren't just caricatures or as you call them, Mike, G.I. Joe 1 theme character, or how I would call them, like the slasher characters that we used to see in the 80s. They were,
yeah, this is the jock, this is the drug dealer, this is the cheerleader, this is the virgin. Yeah, none of that.
Yeah, we didn't have any of that. Yeah, so the characters were fairly good. Whether or not people were upset, and if they were, they had a right to, and I could see why. If they were upset that the characters weren't developed enough, and who were they and all that, I mean, I was still a little, not upset, but confused. Like, okay, we know that Kristen Stewart's character is some sort of engineer, electrical engineer, because I think she even says it. But everybody else, you know, oh, and you knew the captain's the captain. But the other three characters or four characters, actually, other four characters. Everybody, we keep on forgetting the black guy because they killed him off so quick. But, I mean, I don't know any of their skills, and I still never figured out exactly what they were. I think the sand snake chick, she was a biologist or a marine biologist, maybe. But the other ones, I had no idea. Any ideas, anyone?
Hmm. No, I honestly, other than the fact that Kristen Stewart's a mechanical engineer, which is plot specific.
Yeah.
I had no idea what anybody did on there. Well, and again, captain, I have no idea. I mean, I know that TJ Miller was in charge of stuffed bunnies on the station. That was about it.
Right. And the reason I say the sand snake may have been a marine biologist was because she was the one that was interested in the captured creature.
By the way, and I kind of like the fact that they didn't go, "Hi, my name is Amy, and I'm the marine biologist on the station." You know, that they didn't have those sorts of introductions. Because at that point, it's not necessarily relevant. You know, she mentioned she's an engineer at a point where it makes sense for it to have come up in the conversation.
Right. You mean for Kristen Stewart's character?
Right.
I mean, really, aside from, like, character personalities and stuff like that, you know, any backstories and stuff like that, any sort of place in the whole rig really isn't all that important, because it just kind of, well, it hasn't, except for Kristen Stewart's character, because her skills are the only things that come into play towards the end of the film. Basically, it gives an explanation why she's able to do what she does at the finale.
Yeah.
Because we're already in spoiler territory, but it explains how she's able to actually hack into the whole system of a billion-dollar rig and cause it to explode.
Yeah, all right, that's some odd stuff.
Oh, because she just kind of said she was like a mechanical engineer, and in the beginning she said she just fixed pipes or something, but then she knows all of that.
Right. Yeah.
That struck me as a little odd. I wonder if they cut something or.
Right. Well, I mean, what one thing? Obviously, the ending, yeah, and how they what she does at the ending is to. I mean, we've seen that in hundreds of different films, obviously, and the issue with that is I've always felt even
there's a bunch of issues.
Well, it's not just the fact that we've seen it before, but also I can't believe that something that easy could destroy a billion-dollar thing. It would be protected.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't think that most nuclear reactors have an auto meltdown setting.
Well,
most of them have every safeguard in place possible to try and prevent that.
Well, you're right, but this ain't Russia. This is, I assume,
America, and like the and one of the things I if we're talking about the ending, I asked this question in the theater. A lot of people were asking the question at the end of the online that I saw talking about it. Why didn't she get into the life raft with the other chick?
Yeah, exactly. We're only talking 7 miles, so it's not like, I mean, if they're crunched together for just the 7 miles, is that a big deal?
And you're talking about two women that together weigh about 150 pounds, which is probably what the guy weighed.
Well, that's the thing.
Understand the mechanical specifications of an escape pad and a deep sea rig.
Yeah.
Because you get into air pressure and oxygen.
Yeah. The whole mechanics are, as you said, are just kind of never explained or anything like that. And one thing, too, that really is, because it kind of also reminded me how in Alien, they just tried to decide what to do with regard, because they're being cut down one by one, is that the escape shuttle can't hold 3 people, because there's only, like, 4 people by the end of, and they're, so, but we can understand why they couldn't try that initially, because they're trying to travel through miles and miles and miles of empty space to try to get home. Versus just going up, as you said, like, several miles to get to the surface. But
okay, guys, you keep on talking about just 7 miles to the surface, but a lot happens when you are coming up from the bottom of the ocean.
I didn't say just 7 miles. I said it. I'm saying is that it is a thing that goes to the surface. I know a lot happens. But I don't know why it would happen one way with one person in it and not that way with 2 people in it. And there was a perfect opportunity because the other one realizes there's something wrong, knows she can't get away, and she says, just get in. You know, why is that conversation not take place? Why don't you come with me? I can't because. What would happen? Oh, okay. And off you go. Or she punches her and stops her, you know, but there was no attempt to explain to the audience why this really obvious thing would not have worked.
Yeah. And that's a fair point, Mike.
And I don't know a lot about, oceanographic physics. I do know enough that I don't see how having 2 people in the capsule is going to change it. You know, that would have been about the same mass as a large man who, you know, about the size of T.J. Miller going in into that same capsule, you know, would have been okay with. Other than the fact that it might be a bumpy ride and one person's going to have to sit on the other person's lap.
Well, and they're using twice the oxygen because there's 2 people instead of 1.
No, if oxygen has a lot to do with body size. And if you have 2 smaller people, they're going to be using, you know, and 1 larger person, that's not necessarily going to be double the oxygen use.
Maybe not exactly. It's going to be more.
But I don't know how much more.
Plus more CO2 getting expelled. I'm just saying there's factors. That's okay. I think it's a nitpick.
And that would have taken about a line to explain it. Right? I'm just saying.
I think it's a nitpick.
It's a nitpick, but when a lot of the audience is going, wait a minute, and a lot of the, I know I'm not the only one, so there were a number of people who brought this up, so I have to say it goes kind of beyond being a nitpick, because it also wasn't like a really tight fit. Right. There seemed to be a lot of room in there.
Well, and this was another thing too. You're talking about lost opportunities. In the opening of the movie, she talks about how, you know, basically cynicism is safer because you have less to lose.
People suck.
Right. But here's my thing. Again, we're going back to the thing, like, maybe stuff was cut. Maybe she wasn't supposed to be a static character, and maybe that was supposed to be her redeeming moment. You know what I mean? It didn't make sense the way it was now, because she was a cynic in the beginning and she was a cynic at the end. Right? Because she says, oh, you have less to lose. So basically, she puts up front kind of the idea that she doesn't care about her life anyway. So it doesn't matter. But like I said, if there was stuff cut out, maybe she was a cynic. Maybe she actually did have an arc during the film, but that all got cut out. And then at the end, her sacrificing herself was to redeem, you know, redeem herself. So that's what I mean. I mean, the more you guys talk about cutting things out, the more I'm like, oh, my God, that makes total sense, too. There was probably a whole arc cut out.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that kind of inner moral, and this whole weird thing going on with the character is all within her head, with, like, you know, inner dialogue and monologues and stuff like that. But it always feels like it was added in there after the film was finished and things were removed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it felt like, because none of these moments take place when anything really important happens. You know, we have it like during the bathroom scene, and then we have a couple moments where there's nothing really going, just her just walk in and just dialogue being added to that. And then, of course, towards the finale, and that kind of weird last shot. So it feels like they had something in mind at first, and then they decided to change it around towards the end.
Yeah, the whole beginning monologue was kind of annoying, I felt, because it's just another character that's complaining about blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, for crying out loud, I don't need to hear that crap again. But that's just me, I guess. I mean, not everybody has to be miserable.
Yes, they do, Phil. Yes, they do.
Why you want to burn it all down?
Well, that's true. But when I'm outside with my dog walking the dog, I don't want to burn anything down. I'm at peace. I'm away from all the
horrible. Walking the dog.
Yeah, that's it. What's that from? That's from some music, some rapper and song.
It's the Butthead.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
To breaking the law.
That's right. That's right. But the thing is also, it's kind of like the way she's talking about it, like, you don't know day and night and all this other stuff. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, if you have 300 people, I can't believe you're that isolated. If it was just like the movie Alien, where you only have 10 people, I could most certainly see it. But you have 300 people. Everybody's on schedule to work certain hours, mm-hmm. you know, on and on and on. And so it didn't. I couldn't get her nonsense in that monologue because of that.
She's emo, Phil.
You're probably right. That's the only thing that can explain it.
Oh, oh my God! I haven't heard that expression in forever.
Right. Well, with her hair the way it is. Bleach blonde and short. She was probably a punk rocker, so yeah, she's gonna hate everything anyway. But I don't know. Anyway, but all right. So let's start talking about some of the other stuff. Now, did you get an idea that the captain was part of the conspiracy? Because I read somewhere.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't.
I didn't.
What
get
did
it.
I miss?
Well,
he was stationed on the thing that's closed down now. She found his old suit there with his name badge.
Yeah. There was a
previous station there, and they probably knew something was up with where they were drilling and came back anyway.
Oh, okay.
Money's more
important. Right. So
I didn't get that, but...
Yeah, see, I didn't get it. Even though I had read about that even before I went to see the film, I didn't get it. Though I could see it, because I don't think it was implied well enough, even though it was a quote-unquote abandoned section of the underground drilling stations, there was stuff there that shouldn't have been there, meaning the captain stuff. So you're right, Eric. But I don't think it was implied well enough, is all I'm thinking. But
well, and again, it's part of the script writing issues with this movie. It could have been more explicit, but I picked up on it.
Right, right. Yeah, so basically what it is, it's implying
partially because of what Mike mentioned before, the Chekhov's old station, you know.
Yeah,
He immediately tried to shut down any discussion of going there. He's like, oh, that's all gone, you know. I think he didn't want anybody going there because then they would have known that he had an inkling that this whole mess they're in was likely.
Right, right. Yeah, so that was one aspect. Now, what else do we want to discuss? Yeah, so what did you guys think of the killing off the black guy the way they did? That actually is kind of interesting because even though it – I guess it was interesting simply for the fact that at that point we still didn't know it was a monster movie. I mean, we knew because we probably heard about it or whatever. But I mean, if you went in completely blind, you wouldn't know it was a monster movie. And so when he dies, you just think it's a F up, which it is. It's just an F up, fuck up. But the thing is at that point, his death had nothing to do with the monsters. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was supposed to, I mean, I think this is what one issues with like trailers, as Eric would always say. Eric, your cue. Anyways, as Eric would say, it was fuck trailers. And because if I had went to this blind, maybe I would not have been so certain if it was going to be a monster movie or not. Then again, the poster pretty much confirms it's going to be a monster movie, and the trailers really already confirmed that too. So I guess it was trying to show that at least there was just more than just the creatures that they worry about. And initially it was supposed to be that the dangers of the environment were the first thing they were trying to get away from. And the collapsing rig.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, also it was interesting too is when the characters were, I think it was the Sand Snake that said he knew that his suit was defective.
Well, and he did. They showed that when he said try and find six helmets, right. They were looking around. The dude found the one that had a crack in it, and he intentionally gave the other one to Kristen Stewart and kept the defective one for himself. So he,
which makes him the one person in the world who would not have given Kristen Stewart the cracked helmet.
Jeez.
But see, I just kept thinking, boy, I don't think I know it's a horror movie, and so I could throw that out. But I thought, boy, they don't really realize how strong the glass is in those helmets, do they? I mean, those things are designed to withstand tremendous amounts of pressure.
Well, as long as they're solid, once a crack gets in one,
but it really is freaking hard to get a crack in it.
Well, right, but the whole station was collapsing.
Yeah, because of the way that he found it. It was kind of like laying on the ground under some crap, I thought. I thought something had fallen on it, and, you know, that certainly would crack it, you know?
A lot of that stuff is designed to withstand take a licking. I mean, that those would be some of the things I would most expect to withstand the collapse of that station.
Okay.
But anyway, it's still fun to watch it explode. With his head in it.
Actually, implode.
Thank you. With his head in it.
Yeah, that was
with the with his head in it part is the important part.
Yes.
And it actually implodes. It was like this explosion, and they all get thrown. It was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, I've never seen anybody die before, and then didn't somebody else go, I've seen people die. I've never seen anybody implode.
Whoa, yes. Yeah.
That was like kind of interesting. Yeah, I was disappointed, honestly, in the first creature because it did remind me so much of Alien.
Yeah, it was very.
Like I was really kind of like, oh, dude, really? It's like the thing that comes out of his chest, blah, blah, blah. But then as they kind of built on it, and like I said, there were moments where the things, and the big surprise, of course, is that they're all just part of this one larger thing. I really liked that. I thought the monster grew on me.
Here's the thing. The baby was all right. And then when they showed the bigger ones, I was like, okay, this is cool. This is an original creature design. It never occurred to me that those might not be the full grown form. And so
reminded me a little of a little bit of the newborn from Alien Resurrection.
And the way their mouths kind of stretched over their bodies reminded me of the gray creatures from Dreamcatcher.
Okay. You know what they reminded me of? The skull crawlers in Kong.
They did?
Skull Island.
Huh, interesting.
But I did like the big gulper thing, you know, that they...
Yeah, they swallow the...
Like gulper eel mouth, right? That they just swallow the person whole.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And when Cthulhu showed up at the end, I was fucking jazzed. I was like, oh,
now this was a dispute online. Was this intended to be a knockoff brand Cthulhu sea monster, right? So just a sea monster that looked like Cthulhu, or was this supposed to be Cthulhu?
Well, I mean, I don't think Cthulhu could get is something that can be taken out by an exploding rig.
Well, and here's the other thing. There was actually an allusion to this creature or a visual reference to it in the beginning when they're all standing around and they're getting ready to get suited up. And the biologist girl, the dark-haired girl, she looks kind of through the fuzz of this glass. And you see these people. It's a portrait of people being eaten alive by a sea serpent. Did anybody catch that?
Oh yeah, that's I remember that.
Mm-hmm. So, which is
really weird, disturbing. Yeah, art. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of blurred because it had been damaged, so you couldn't really see it. And I think they did that on purpose. But it reminded me of a famous piece of artwork, and I did not get a chance to like kind of surf around online and see. But I'm betting it was probably actually meant to sort of evoke the memory of this famous piece of artwork that I would bet. But I didn't think it was Cthulhu. I thought it was something different. I did not really, like the heavy-handed message.
Cthulhu. No. I don't think it was actually Cthulhu, but it could very well be a creature that inspired the Cthulhu mythos.
Oh, totally.
You know, like maybe somebody saw something, and that's where those stories came from.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that...
That artwork was so interesting, because...
go on.
I was just going to... Again, that was the debate online. Hello? I got the idea that it was a creature that was kind of Cthulhu-esque. Others said, you know, it was Cthulhu, and I was like, all right, whatever. Although Cthulhu's supposed to have wings, I didn't see this with wings. And in fairness, Abe, I don't know, did we actually see it destroyed by the nuclear explosion?
Yeah, we saw it come apart.
They pretty much showed that, yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to remember. I know it exploded.
Well, I'll say this.
It left such a big impression on me.
I think it's Cthulhu. Eric said it was to me on IM, and I go, oh my god, that's brilliant. But obviously, I mean, it doesn't actually have to be, but that was the point, I think, is that they were trying to say that, yeah, I mean, you know, a wink and a nod to people who know the Lovecraftian mythos.
Now the ocean can enjoy some Cthulhu soup.
And the smaller monsters, you could say, were the Dagons or something.
Yeah, the creatures from the Dagons.
The deep ones.
Innsmouth, the creatures from the Innsmouth, too, you know.
Yeah, so I thought the creature design was pretty cool, especially the Big Daddy. That was pretty awesome.
Well, let me ask you, Christy.
I will admit, Eric, when I saw the big one and it kind of came out of the gloom, the people in front of me like turned around because I went, wow. I was just like, that's awesome. And they like glared at me and I was like, oh, sorry. Like, I just wasn't expecting it. So it was kind of a cool surprise.
You know, Christy, let me ask you this. When you were watching it, did you see any of the wink and nod to Lovecraft in any of this film?
You know what? I did not, because I literally was not looking for any of that. Had I been looking for something really deep to say about this movie, I might have made that connection. But within 10 minutes into the film, I was kind of like, all right, there's a few interesting little deeper level things I can mention here, but I don't really want to think too hard. I'm just going to kind of ride this out and enjoy the pretty stuff. Like, I was kind of like, you know, I sort of 10 to 15 minutes into the film, I sort of just stopped looking for things and just kind of wanted to watch. And I did have trouble at some moments, too, though, seeing what was going on in the action because it was too dark. Did anybody else have that problem? Or was
I still think y'all need to eat a bunch of carrots because I didn't have a problem.
Well, I mean, there were times I could see things very clearly. I think things happened really fast to the point that sometimes I wish I could go back and see
There was stuff that we were supposed to see clearly, necessarily. I think there was just because you're in an underwater place, it's going to be difficult to see.
Murky.
I think it was intended to the disorientation and confusion. So anyway, apparently here in an interview, the director said, yes, it's Cthulhu.
Sweet.
Oh. Awesome. Eric, you knew it.
Now you have to explain how Cthulhu got taken out by a nuke.
Well, he's just a creature, right? He's not really a god. I mean, he's only a god because people think he is, but he's not a god.
The creatures are a god because they are so beyond our comprehension, our control. I mean, because the very fact that there was the actual Cthulhu in the stories and the other great ones, the old ones, is that if you look at them, you go insane.
Right.
But if you got a nuke, you can take them out, unless they're quantum physics based.
Maybe. Who knows?
Right.
What does God want with a starship?
Right. Right. But once Eric's mentioned Cthulhu to me, I was like, oh my God, that's if it isn't Cthulhu, at least they are definitely.
It was certainly the first thing that popped in my head when I saw that thing.
I mean, the tentacles in front of the face and the kind of humanoid shape and everything. Yeah.
Well, and the director said so. There you go.
Yeah. Well, to be clear, I want to cover myself here because I'm naked right now. But no, it's I'm reading a comment from someone that said the director something. So this is totally hearsay as to what the director said.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have the complete context. Okay. So it's possible the director said it less explicitly. So I don't want to say that 100%. There is still some room to argue until I can find the exact quote. I did see it when I was looking for that answer. Someone wrote a headline and said that this was the kind of monster movie that should have been the next Cloverfield film.
I saw that one too. Yeah.
I would agree with that.
I agree too. I think this would have made a very interesting Cloverfield entry.
Well, it ties right in with some of the, I don't know if you guys got into this or not when Cloverfield came out, but there was a whole bunch of online material associated with Cloverfield that wasn't necessarily directly about the plot of the movie. It was all background about how this Japanese company was drilling at the bottom of the ocean. So it ties right in with all that.
But you know what? Both Hutt and Gallagher are dead. So how could they be reincarnated in this film?
We never saw Hutt.
Yeah, you do. You have to see him once.
Briefly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It's the great grandson of Hutt.
And Gallagher was in Cloverfield 2, Cloverfield 10, Cloverfield 9.
But that was a different story, though.
Yeah.
But they're both Cloverfields.
What I like about the first two Cloverfield films is that they are completely disconnected. They could be in the same universe. They could not be in the same universe. There is no reason for them to reference each other.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a thing that's happening in 2050. It has no reason to reference whatever might have happened in 2005 and 2014 or whenever it was that 10 Cloverfield Lane took place.
Right. Yeah. No, and this would have been a great Cloverfield.
No, and whoever wrote that article, I agree with them entirely. It would have been a fantastic Cloverfield entry.
But you know what? I think the other two films are Universal, and this was a Fox, right? So that would squash that.
Yeah, pretty much.
And whatever the hell happened with Cloverfield Paradox. Somebody else made it. Netflix bought it and made it Cloverfield. I don't know.
Yeah, and then added in a bunch of stuff to try to tie it in. We didn't need an explanation.
Yeah, we didn't need to see that film at all, to be honest. I was so disappointed.
Yeah, we know. You've only stated it 10,000 times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got sucked into watching it after a Super Bowl that I think I didn't like because it didn't turn out how I wanted, but I can't remember.
Well, no, but...
You can remember, you just don't want to.
Wasn't that the point of that, though? Was that the point of that was that they probably knew it was sucky, and they said, oh, let's put it on after the Super Bowl and surprise everybody. And everybody who's, like, drunk and partying and loves Cloverfield is going to run right over there and watch it, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's what they said. They purposely sold it to Netflix because they didn't think it was going to do anything at the theaters. And then Netflix had it, and they had the name Cloverfield. And
you know who hated that movie the most was people that have to write about movies. Because they didn't know it was coming out until that commercial happened during the Super Bowl. And then they realized they had to stay up for 2 hours afterwards and write a fucking review about it for the morning.
Oh, my God.
Which didn't help. And I thought it was a very bland film. I don't think it was nearly as bad as Phil probably
does. It was mediocre. People are calling it terrible. I don't think it was terrible. It was mediocre.
It was mediocre.
Yeah, for me, it was terrible.
Because your Patriots lost and... it wasn't. It was a bland, mediocre film. It was very disappointing. It was about 1,000 times better than El Monstruo del Mar. But I think that it was a brilliant marketing campaign, and I wish that Netflix had done it with a film that would have been more deserving of it.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah,
because I've always said. Erlong said that you don't need to spend $150 million marketing a Star Wars film or the next Avengers film. That if they dropped a commercial tomorrow that says, I don't know, Spider-Man 5 is opening in a week, those theaters are going to fill up right away. Right? I don't think they need to build weeks and months of where we're getting trailers for films that aren't coming out until... for a year and a half, so a year ahead of time, right? That's insane to me.
Sure. Now, let's see what else about this. I think some people are saying that this was a film about environment or something.
There's obviously a message there about hey, maybe don't deep sea drill just for profit.
Well, they did
don't know
one...
what you're doing.
They did have one really heavy-handed line, and it was just so... I mean, I was just like, oh, dude, I'm so done right now with this. But it was like, oh, the ocean is taking... We took too much, and the ocean is taking it back. And I was just like,
totally
all right, excuse me, I am going to throw up right now.
Well,
like,
I was right on those.
Here's how I justify it, and I don't for a second... think that is probably that's not where the director or writer sympathies lie. But the number of people I see on Facebook who say horse shit like that, well, Mother Earth is getting back at us. It's as if Mother Earth is a mother, as a thing, is a deliberate thing. Like Mother Earth wasn't throwing hurricanes around before, hasn't done far worse and had far worse things done to it. It's just this such horseshit, nature worship horseshit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this all the time, but it's also the staple of one of my favorite subgenres of horror films, which is of course the nature horror. Whether it's The Swarm or Day of the Animals or The Birds, whatever it is, it's always a nature is just man has caught one fish too many, Piranha 3D, whatever.
Yep.
I don't pay that any heed. Anyone who thinks that this is a real message movie needs to go watch Prophecy. That's how you make a horror movie, a message movie.
Oh, no, I didn't.
With a puppet.
With a puppet. And in the first 5 minutes, they cover Indigenous Americans, abortion, poverty, the issue. It was all there, squeezing the first
By the way, that's on Prime if anybody wants to check it out.
What movie is that?
It's pretty
Prophecy.
Awful. The Prophecy.
Or
maybe it's
the
just
Human
Prophecy.
Bear movie? Yeah.
Not
yeah.
the one with Christopher Walken in it. The one from the 70s with, was it Elliot Shire?
Yeah, I think so.
Talia Shire.
Yeah, so, but the actual, but no, if you really want a message horror film, environmental horror film, watch The Bay.
Yeah.
The Bay was really awesome.
That was an environmental.
That is a fantastic one.
1970, what year did that come out? Frogs is actually pretty very heavy-handed on the environmental message, too.
But it's not a good
movie. Ray Milland. No, it's not, but it is typical of that 70s, like, we're going to beat you over the head with this environmental message thing.
Yeah,
no, I didn't say this was an environmental message movie. I just, it just was so random. It was just such a groan-worthy line, and there was no establishment for it. Like, there was no build. It just came out of nowhere. Like, it was just like, oh, now we're gonna pause this public service announcement. Okay, now back to the movie. Like, it was
that, that's the thing about that public service announcement, or anybody who says that this film isn't an environmental film. The whole disaster happened because of monsters. It had nothing to do with the environment.
No, it felt it was. I think it was trying to make it seem more deeper than it really was.
Well, but because mankind had violated Mother Nature again.
Yeah.
Unleashed the monster upon us. When human beings stray outside their box, they never know what horrors await.
Yeah, it was that kind of shit. Yeah. It was just that it just so came out of nowhere. Like, and the character who said it, you know, was the dark-haired biologist, which makes total sense that she would be on board with that. But there was no indication that she even gave a shit anywhere in the movie before this. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, I'm going to make this statement now. It's like, all right, dude, okay.
Yeah, it feels like that is one of the more signs of stuff that was added and removed kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, like maybe she did have some kind of, because we all said, you know, we got the sense who, I think Mike said, I didn't get the sense, I didn't understand how all the characters were sort of related to each other. And, like, maybe there were pieces missing that kind of established that, you know, she was, do you know what I mean? That she was, like, more of an environmentalist or less of a, you know, a person who was pro-drilling. Maybe that shit was cut, too.
Right.
But it was totally something I we've all seen people say comments like that online. So I have no problem believing somebody in that situation would say something like that, even while their own ass is on the line.
Well, and the thing is, though, I mean, all those people that are doing that job working on that station, I doubt those are going to be environmentalist type people anyway. I mean, they're going to be environmentalist.
That's probably
people.
The most valid point about this I've heard yet.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be environmentalists. There's two types of environmentalists. There's the ones that like want to stop everything, and then there's ones that work with the environment. And I would think most of these people would be the type that could be environmentalists that would be working with the environment. I don't think any of them were down there. At least the characters that we saw were down there. They would not have taken that job if they didn't believe that it was a worthy job.
No, there are. I mean, we don't know the world of 2050 in this movie, you know. But there are government regulations. There are environmentalists that will work with these companies, like, you know, with like Exxon and Mobil and so forth. You know, because they're going to do the drilling and so forth, but they're going to try to find a way to minimize the impact of what they're doing. To you know, or do environmental assessments to say, here is a place you can drill, here is a place you shouldn't drill, and so forth. Or when the accident does happen, how to do environmental recovery in the quickest and most efficient, you know, way possible. And all that. There are environmentalists. You don't have to be a rabid environmentalist to be an environmentalist. You can have informed people who know what they're doing and scientists. Who are working with the enemy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's part of what their role is. It's very important because they keep these companies not only in line, but there are some companies that do, you know, want to minimize their impact and really do. So they need to have these people to advise them on what to do.
Right. You know, it's, I mean, like, it's like auditors. Like,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
it's like auditors, right? You need your auditors because you just, it's check, believe, but check, or whatever the term is. So you
trust,
believe,
but verify.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. What was it again, Eric?
Trust but verify.
Yeah. So you try. A lot of these people, that environmentalists that would work with these companies, would be the ones that would trust, but they would verify. And the companies want to be trusted, and the way to be trusted is to be verified. So I think these are the type of environmentalists that would be on board, and not the ones that would be, you know, throwing paint on people because they wear a certain type of clothing, you know. So
just do that for fun.
So Mike, are you actually, speaking of day jobs, Mike, are you on the laptop or iPad, or what are you using?
I'm on my tablet, on the Surface. Surface Go.
Okay. Yeah, you sound fine.
He's on the Surface, not underwater.
But yeah.
I'm just recycling the bad jokes that were made on our freaking Facebook.
You don't scratch that. Eric, you go to your room.
I'm already in my room. What are you going
to
do?
Go to your closet then. Go to your closet and stay there.
So what did you think of the deaths? The HUD's death was probably the only one that was – well, no, that's not true. The black guy's death was cool too. So there's at least two deaths that were cool.
Yeah, I think those are the two that were most stand out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you think about it, there was only three characters actually. Well, four characters die. One was the captain, and his death was nothing spectacular. And then Kristen Stewart's death wasn't anything spectacular because it's just a big explosion. But the other two were kind of horror death.
Yeah, one implodes, and the other guy, the HUD character, gets ripped out right out of his suit.
Yeah, yeah. He gets sucked out of a leg in a suit, which was kind of cool.
Actually, I did sort of feel bad when that guy died. The funny
guy. Oh, yeah.
I feel bad. I was like, that sucks. Yeah, I just, I don't know. I felt bad.
Yeah, I mean, I guess even though, I don't know. All in all, I think I liked his character the best out of all of them.
Yeah. I didn't really care about any of them.
Yeah, that too.
I just wanted to see creatures.
Yeah. Yeah, and the creatures were pretty cool.
They were cool. I love how the very fact they were coming out of the skin of the big guy.
Right, that was pretty cool.
I love that moment at the end where she's alone and there's the one little piece. That was the one that reminded me the most of the J-Horror ghost that was, like, banging at the window looking at her. Mm-hmm. Dude, that,
yeah.
That just gave me the creeps. A chill just shot right up my spine. I was like, that is awesome. I was like, that is really good. So, there were a few moments in here that were just really fantastic.
My favorite part of the movie was at during the end credits. Not just because the movie was over. Nah, just kidding. I pretty much liked it. But I really liked the implication that they covered everything up and we're just going to go back down there and drill again.
But, yeah, I like that too. I thought that was good.
Was I the only one that was one disappointed that you have a station with 300 people in it and you only showed us a couple of people getting killed?
Yeah.
There were so many potential deaths.
Yeah.
We could have seen a good old creature slaughter. They wasted it on an earthquake. God damn it.
Well, yeah, it wasn't really an earthquake, but...
Right, yeah, right.
Well, I think the implication there is that the earthquake was caused by this thing coming up out of the...
That's
it probably wasn't an earthquake, because they said there was a noise outside, right after this. Yeah, so it was either either there was an earthquake, because they talk about, you know, fracking, they talk about the earthquake being caused by the drilling, right? T.J. Miller makes a line about that, I think. And then you also, you know, hear the creature outside. So either the creature was released by the drilling, causing an earthquake to crack the earth open and unleash Cthulhu upon us, or there was never an earthquake and the creature just beat the shit out of the station. Because
that's what I think. I thought it was the creatures just beating the shit out of the station.
And I don't think it really matters one way or another.
I think it was both.
Does anyone else wonder what happened to the spider?
Oh, yeah, I did.
I was like, oh no, he's dead now.
What the fuck is wrong with you people?
Yeah, he's dead.
The spider was the deepest character.
Well, the thing is, spiders represent... Spiders not only represent a turn of fate, typically.
Fox spiders.
But spiritually they
the
do...
podcaster.
Spiritually, they do represent... what is it? It's the power of like femininity and the ability to use your own intuition to figure things out. And so, again, I think this was one of those symbols that was kind of lost, probably because stuff was cut. The fact that she was messing around with this spider for that amount of time really puts a coat hanger on it. You know what I mean? It really hangs the coat on the rod and says, look at me. So obviously that spider was supposed to be a symbol of something that I do not believe was fully realized in the film.
It was a symbol of the fact that Kristen Stewart had mated with her former lover, then killed him and drained him of his fluids.
Oh, jeez.
I just think all
spiders. And then wrapped him up in yarn and stuffed him in the basement for future larder.
That sounds like a different movie.
Yeah, they are working on a prequel to explain how the spider got in the sink in the first place.
The spider is their love child.
You know, there is a movie out there right now called Itsy Bitsy that I have not watched. That a spider based in some.
Oh, I heard it was pretty good. Yeah, the buddy.
I actually just bought it. Voodoo had for whatever reason, in the middle of January, had a horror sale last weekend and a bunch of stuff for $4.99, which I posted a link to. That included some new films that are right now rental, like Girl on the Third Floor, Bliss, and other things that were available for that. So if you want, so I picked it up because it was basically the cost of what a rental would have been. So I wanted to see it. I figure this is a good way to do it. And if I buy it now, it'll be on Shudder for free tomorrow.
This is true. Like Circle.
Like Circle, like Luz, I think, which I mentioned last week, is not being especially good. But if you want to watch it, it is on Shudder.
What is it called?
Luz.
Oh, Luz. Yeah. And then what was the other one? Bliss was. I know Barrett Heisner bought it for $4.99, and then like 3 days later, it went on Shudder. What else? I was going to say.
Motherfucker.
That. Crap with the creatures, little creatures falling off the big creature. That was blatant, like you said, Mike. That was kind of like a Cloverfield, right? I think.
That's
what happened to the first Cloverfield. Was that it?
Yeah, because of the little insects that fell off the skin that were biting everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the first Cloverfield, yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up? Anything?
I think we've done a remarkable job about talking about this movie as much as we have.
It's a very thin, very shallow film.
Yeah, but I think you had a pretty good time with it overall.
Yeah. It is an okay film. Like I said,
it's better than Alien Covenant.
Not hard to do.
I don't know about that, but yeah, it's not as annoyingly bad as Alien Covenant. I don't know if it's more watchable than Alien Covenant. I don't think it's as memorable. That's not necessarily a good thing.
I'm going to remember Cthulhu for a long time.
Cthulhu was neat. I would have liked a little more Cthulhu. I would have loved to see Cthulhu come up and destroy whatever 2050 New York looked like, or Tokyo, or, I don't know, Bangkok. I don't care.
Is there Cthulhu in your deep sunken city?
If this is one of those movies that I can recommend to people who like movies like this, right? I would not recommend to a person who, even if someone's a horror fan, right? I would say, do you like monster
movies? If somebody's into slashers, maybe not this.
Or ghost stories,
right.
Or you know, psychological thrillers, no. Do you like big monster movies? Yes. All right. You won't probably love this one, but it's a different one, and it's got a neat monster in it.
Right.
So give this one a try, you know, and that's probably what I would do with this one. You know, it's not, you know, there are a lot of big monster movies. There are a lot that I like a lot more than this. And like I said, if you're looking for aquatic monster films, you know, you've got Deep Rising, I think, is really, really good. I don't know if anyone considers where people consider The Abyss, which to me feels more science fiction than horror and alien than monster.
Yeah, but it's still a good movie.
But still, oh, it's the if you're talking about underwater creatures, I think it's the pinnacle of the genre. Which, by the way, you can watch on HBO Now or HBO Go on demand. They have it has available, I think, in high def, which they haven't had forever.
They haven't been promised that for. Yeah, I know.
And then Leviathan, which honestly I have not seen since theater, so I can't.
I actually have a DVD, and even though it takes a lot from Alien and The Thing,
yes.
it does have some pretty cool creature effects and stuff.
Right, and I saw it in theaters when it came out, so Alien and The Thing were still much fresher in my mind, so it felt more like a ripoff, and now that 40 years have passed, or enough 30 years have passed, it might feel like less of a ripoff because so many other films have ripped those off.
Yeah.
again, it was the same year as Deep Star 6, which is just, I did watch more recently and was really still just a terrible, terrible film. but more memorable than I think this one is, because we're talking about Deep Star 6 after 30 years. I don't know who's going to be talking about this movie in 30 years.
Right, right. All right. So before we have everybody else give their thoughts, some house cleaning. Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It's a general interest podcast called The Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find us wherever podcasts are sold for free.
Excellent. Very well. And Westworld Podcast, looks like that's going to probably come back, Bullets, Broncos, and Bots, in about 3 months from now, near the middle to end of March. I think that's when the new season comes out.
2 months. 2 months. Yeah, we're already in January.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So that's exciting for all the folks who like Westworld. Hopefully it's not as bad as last season and it's more like the first season, but we'll find out.
I like the last season.
All right, that's good. That's good. I didn't hate it either, but it was definitely it didn't keep my attention as the first season. Let's see. What else? Chrissy, you actually have a online magazine you're doing right now?
I do. Our submissions are open for our inaugural issue of 34 Orchard, which is a dark literary magazine. So we are looking for something very specific, usually something that evokes strong emotion, very visceral writing. You can check us out at 34orchard.com. And we are open for submissions until January 31st. And then we're going to close for a little while and we will reopen in July. So you can go ahead and check that out.
All right. I'll probably send a story to you then by the end of the month. Chrissy, what's 31 Orchard or 34 Orchard stand for? Where did that name come from?
Actually, 34 Orchard was an address of a place in which I lived in college back in, God, like 30, I guess almost 30 years ago now. And it's just an interesting, it was a very interesting time in my life because it was very joyful, but it was also very painful and sad too. And so it was kind of reflected in the address in that the three is like, you know, the Holy Trinity, it's joy, and four is the Shinto number of death. So that always kind of cracked me up about it. And I said, someday I'm going to use 34 Orchard as a title for something, but I don't know what. And so I always just sort of wrote it down, and just over the years I would find it scrawled places, and I'm like, all right, eventually I'm going to do something with this. And then I just decided it was time to do something. And orchards are cool, too, because orchards can also be very beautiful, but they can also be very creepy. So it really kind of works on a lot of different levels. So that's where that comes from.
All right. Very good. All right. So let's give us some final thoughts on.
Yes. I think there's a couple of little things of news. One of the big ones is a series, unfortunately, has been canceled. Recent news, Mindhunter has been put on hold indefinitely.
That's correct. Yeah, all the actors have been released from their contracts. David Fincher has gone off to, who's the showrunner, has gone off to direct a new film based off of the screenwriter of Citizen Kane. So it's like a biopic. And so the thing has been completely put on hold, which kind of sort of means it's probably canceled. So, yeah, that's important news. Abe, yep, continue. What else? There's a couple other things.
Oh, I will say, if I can just interject here. This has absolutely no weight of truth to it in terms of reality, but he did say that one way that there were going to be five seasons of this one way or another at one point. You know, he wanted to get the five seasons. So whether that meant, you know, he would have to take it, maybe he'll shop it to another network and so forth. I don't know if they were going to just to have to recast those characters or move forward in time and have different characters in it. So again, it's why they're saying it's on hiatus as opposed to canceled, I'm guessing.
Right. Right.
But does that mean, but now, whether he still has the fire in his belly to continue and get all these seasons out, or whether the logistics prove insurmountable and he can't end up doing it, it's in this position of limbo right now, where unfortunately it's just going to string fans along.
Hope is the root of all disappointment. Just assume it's canceled.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah. It is interesting, though.
We got the Manson episode. That's the main thing.
And I guess one other news in terms of another Netflix series, for those looking forward to more of the Witcher series, we'll unfortunately have to wait till 2021, as that's when season 2 has been slated for.
Well, given that season 1 started on December 25th of 2019, you know, it's not that far away. You know, we're less than 12 months away from 2021 now.
Right, right. Yeah, and a lot of these shows, like Mindhunter, as we were discussing, take 2 years to come out. You know, so it's not surprising that it's going to be 2021 instead of 2020. Because as we see all these binge shows and HBO shows and all that, they usually do every 2 years rather than every year, you know?
Well, ones that have a really high production value, and I haven't seen The Witcher. I'm guessing, though, that it does.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Yeah, so that makes sense. Any other news you're going to say there, Abe?
Nope, that's all on my end.
Yeah, because those are only. Oh, and then The Watchmen, right, Mike? They just doing. Lindelof just decided that he just wanted to do the one and done season, and so that's pretty much it, right, for HBO.
Yeah, he had, and I highly recommend the series. I've been a fan of the comic since it was first released, and kind of amazingly to me, this did about as good a job as continuing that story as I can imagine. And it ends in a spot that's sort of ambiguous, but also works perfectly fine with an ambiguous ending. I don't know if we want the answer of what happens at that ending. So if Lindelof didn't have an idea of how to carry it forward and nobody else has a really good idea how to do it, then maybe it's better just to let it end there as a thing that was good. Unto itself, because it told the story just sort of like the original Watchmen did, and they resisted the temptation to tell anything more with that. Certainly the original creator did. And this is, it probably benefits from that. Its reputation stayed intact for a long time as a result.
Very good. All right, so final opinions on Underwater. Eric?
I like the movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but I think it's a good movie. I particularly enjoyed the visual effects. The acting was good enough. Had some screenwriting issues, but they didn't bother me as much as some other folks. Because it was a cool action movie, and I was satisfied with that. So I liked it, generally. And if they come out with a disc that has all sorts of behind the scenes stuff, I will purchase it because I'm curious about that aspect of this movie.
All right. Sounds good. I liked it a lot too, Eric. I'm pretty much on board, identical with you. I liked it more because of the claustrophobic space, outer spaceship type feel, or submarine type feel. The claustrophobia, all that is kind of cool. The monster's awesome. It's a disaster survival film too, and those are kind of cool, especially when they're done well, like the Poseidon Adventure. So yeah, I mean, it's not really a thinking man's film, but again, it was a great entertainment value, I felt. I give it a thumbs up. Mike?
I think it's a mediocre entertainment value. Again, I would not. There are certain films that you can recommend to people outside the fan of that genre. And in this particular case, I would only recommend it not only to fans of the genre, but really just to the fans of the specific subgenre we're dealing with. But otherwise, I think it's an giant monster films are sadly still an underrepresented number of films out there. So beggars can't be choosers. If you're looking for a giant monster movie, maybe this will work for you. Give it a shot. But I also don't think that it's like, you know, you got to go see it. You absolutely must see it. I know I was looking over my list of films I saw in 2018, and there were a couple of films I completely forgot I saw. I forgot they even existed. I had to remind myself what the films were about, but I know I watched them. I could very easily see this kind of falling into that crack in about 3 or 4 years.
All right, very good. Chrissy.
Like I said, I mean, this was a fun little hour and 20-minute kill for me. I had a good time. I definitely think there wasn't too much to discuss in terms of depth. I would say if you just really want to go and sit and have a little bit of fun for an hour and 20 minutes and turn your brain off, then it's fine. And if you do appreciate one thing about this, like Eric said, the creatures are really cool and the special effects are really cool. Like, there are moments where nowadays in this age, we know we can go, oh, that's CGI. Oh, that's CGI, how they did that. But this is one of those movies where I actually had to stop and be like, you know, is that all CGI? Like, how did they actually do this? Like, I think they did a really good job conveying what it must feel like to be down there in the dark and the endless like that. So for that alone, it's just worth it to go check it out. And it does move pretty quick. It's not what I would call a movie that drags. So anyway, those are my thoughts. I pretty much agree with what everybody said here tonight. So.
You know, I was wondering, I was thinking, because if I remember correctly, The Abyss was a Fox film. And, you know, again, that was 30 years ago. They built a large tank to film that movie in.
Wow.
On the Fox lot. I'm pretty sure it was the Fox lot. So it makes me wonder if they just used that to do the filming. If that is still, even still exists.
I wonder. That's interesting. And The Abyss was James Cameron, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, Abe.
So while this film wasn't anything, you know, mind-blowing, it wasn't anything revolutionary, it wasn't anything that is going to honestly hang around in my memory in terms of compared to other films, I still enjoyed a lot of it, even though I did have problems with lack of character development and some storytelling problems. The creatures were really cool. I did love the Lovecraftian stuff. I thought the bits of the tricks of the to build this environment of this oppressive environment in this deep ocean area were cool. And the lighting was pretty awesome, how they kind of give you the claustrophobic and kind of, you don't know what's in the corner of your eye sort of tension. So I did like that. I don't know. I personally wouldn't say this is a film you need to rush to the theaters to see. I don't think it's going to be around much longer anyways. If you like monster movies, you could do better, and honestly, you could even do worse. It's kind of the middle thing in the genre, but overall, it was an experience that was bad. It's just one was just kind of it's a January horror film.
All right, very well. So, once again, this is 2020 underwater horror film, sci-fi horror film, January release, starring Kristen Stewart, Vincent Cassell, among others. Still at theaters, but as Abe said, it'll be gone pretty quick because it's not making much money. If you don't get to it quickly, you'll have to wait until VOD. Some of us here think it's probably worth checking it out on VOD, while others say probably wait until it's just streaming for free. It depends on your taste in horror films. And that's pretty much it. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lose out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about underwater. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.